In your Bibles, please, we have three psalms this afternoon. They're short psalms. They're all drawn together in our study today. So Psalms 46, 47, and 48. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired Word of God. To the chief musician for the sons of Korah, a song upon Alamot. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore will not we fear, though the earth be removed and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea. Though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof. Selah. There is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. The heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved, he uttered his voice, the earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us, the God of Jacob is our refuge. Selah. Come, behold the works of the Lord, what desolations he hath made in the earth. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow and cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Selah. Psalm 47, to the chief musician, a psalm for the sons of Korah. O clap your hands, all ye people. Shout unto God with the voice of triumph. For the Lord Most High is terrible. He is a great king over all the earth. He shall subdue the people under us and the nations under our feet. He shall choose our inheritance for us, the excellency of Jacob, whom he loved. Selah. God is gone up with a shout, the Lord with the sound of a trumpet. Sing praises to God, sing praises unto our King, sing praises. For God is the King of all the earth. Sing ye praises with understanding. God reigneth over the heathen, God sitteth upon the throne of his holiness. The princes of the people are gathered together, even the people of the God of Abraham. For the shields of the earth belong unto God. He is greatly exalted. Psalm 48, a song and psalm for the sons of Korah. Great is the Lord and greatly to be praised in the city of our God, in the mountain of his holiness. Beautiful for situation. The joy of the whole earth is Mount Zion, on the sides of the north, the city of the great king. God is known in her palaces for a refuge. For lo, the kings were assembled, they passed by together, they saw it, and so they marveled. They were troubled and hasted away. Fear took hold upon them there, and pain as of a woman in travail. Thou breakest the ships of Tarshish with an east wind. As we have heard, so have we seen in the city of the Lord of hosts, in the city of our God. God will establish it forever. Selah. We have thought of thy loving kindness, O God, in the midst of thy temple. According to thy name, O God, so is thy praise unto the ends of the earth. Thy right hand is full of righteousness. Let Mount Zion rejoice, and let the daughters of Judah be glad, because of thy judgments. Walk about Zion. Go round about her. Tell the towers thereof. Mark ye well her bulwarks. Consider her palaces, that ye may tell it to the generation following. For this God is our God forever and ever. He will be our guide even unto death. May God add his blessing to the reading and hearing of his most holy word. So, three particular psalms, all with the statement of authorship, speaking of the sons of Korah. Again, we're remembering that great mercy of God in those kinds of statements with regard to Korah's ongoing Levitical ministry through his sons, although Korah himself turned away from that and confronted Moses and Aaron. There are some common themes through these three psalms. You probably heard them. We're talking about the nations and what they're doing and what God is doing with the nations and how God is working with the nations. It's a really interesting thing to think about it. Right in the middle of this, notice the princes of the people are gathered at the end of Psalm 47. Even the people of the God of Abraham, for the shields of the earth belong to God. He is greatly exalted. What was the promise of God to Abraham? Remember that thy seed would inherit the world. That's how Paul puts it in Galatians chapter 3, that all nations will be blessed in thee. So in Psalm 46, we begin by talking about the greatness of the care that God exercises over his people. God is our refuge and strength. But then we move beyond that into the nations as those who are rising up against the Lord and against his people, but the Lord rules over them. Then secondly, in the second psalm, notice that God has gone up, and it is there, it is from the place of his going up that he will rule over all the nations. And then thirdly, we have, great is the Lord, greatly to be praised in the city of our God, in the mountain of his holiness. And so we learn, finally, in culmination, that place from which God rules and reigns over the nations. And that is that this is not just a part of God's sovereignty as creator or God over the world, but that it is through Zion and the preaching of the gospel that the entirety of the world will be at one time subdued unto the Lord. So these three psalms brought together with that kind of a theme, they really do hang together in that way. All right, so let's go back and look at a few things in Psalm 46. The first thing is to the chief musician, again, public worship. For the sons of Korah, again, forgiveness. Now, a song upon Alamot. That's not talking about ice cream on top, right? Alamot is a word in the Hebrew. Well, first of all, it's a feminine plural. That O-T-H ending on the end of it for us English speakers tells us that it's a plural noun, a feminine plural noun. Okay? And the singular word is Alama. And I think that occurs one time in the Psalter as well. So Alamot, it may mean a particular kind of instrument or tune. It's a musical notation, most likely, the exact meaning of which is somewhat lost on us today. All right, so notice that the people of God look to God in times of trouble for their strength. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. That's the statement of the doctrine. Notice the statement of the application. Therefore, we will not fear. Right? What's the doctrine? God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in time of trouble. What's the application? Therefore, we will not fear. Let's expand on the application. Though the earth be removed, though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though waters roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with a swelling thereof. And then the word Selah, and we remember what Selah means. We think it means that this is a pause in the singing by the Levitical choirs so that some musical instruments could go on ahead and give the people of God time to reflect on what they had just sung. Okay? So Selah probably... I know I had one pastor that would say, guitar lick goes here. Well, that's kind of a modern way of saying, let the instruments play for a moment and let the people of God settle and reflect upon what they have just sung. Well, that is something to reflect on, isn't it? That God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in times of trouble. And if I can paraphrase the rest of that section, no matter what happens. No matter what. God does not stop being our refuge and help in time of trouble if, well, it's every trouble except this one. It's every trouble except that one. I mean, I trust God to be my refuge and strength unless, and once you say unless, then you say that there's something greater than God's refuge and strength to you, right? And there is no such thing as unless. We all know some people, maybe ourselves, have been through some great times of what the psalmist will call the valley of the shadow of death. Lost a loved one. Been tragically affected by something. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in time of trouble, no matter what the trouble. Okay, so, Selah, people of God, stop. Think about that a moment. Think about that God is our refuge and strength, no matter what the trouble. There is a river, verse 4. Again, we're gonna bring up water, refreshment. This is talking about spiritual refreshment. Life. One of the scriptures we didn't get to in the morning sermon today is Revelation chapter 21. And what do we see? Pure water of life flowing freely out from the throne of God and of the Lamb. There is a river. Notice, there's waters that roar in trouble in verse 3, but there's a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the place, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High, and God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her in that right early. The Lord's timing is not late, as we often are want, you know, fond of saying. Listen, if it seems like God is helping us late, that's due to our impatience and not to His inattention. Right? Okay, so now we see in verse 6, we turn our eyes from the gaze of the tabernacles of the Most High out to the nations. The heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved, but notice, He uttered His voice and the earth melted. So all of those troubles that we read about in verses 1, 2, and 3, the heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved. Notice how quickly, and I think that this paucity of phrase, this shortness of phrase, is meant specifically to show us the power and sovereignty of God. So, what is it? These things are roiling and boiling. He uttered His voice, the earth melted. That's it, we move on to the next topic. It's supposed to be a short and pithy kind of direct statement that God is indeed ruling over all of the world, and that on behalf of His people. Then notice the next phrase, the Lord of hosts is with us. Of course, here now He's not called God our refuge. He's called the Lord of armies, the Lord of hosts, Yahweh or Jehovah Tzebaoth, right? That He is the Lord of forces, the Lord of armies. And so no matter how much military might, no matter how much prowess the enemy builds up, the Lord of armies will have His way. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Selah. Once again, stop and think that no matter how the heathen rage, the God is our refuge still. All right, so then in verses 8 through the end, we are counseled not just to think upon God our refuge, God as our refuge, but to come and behold the works of the Lord and what desolations He has made in the earth. That's verse 8. So He makes wars to cease, He breaks the bow, He cuts the spear, He burns the chariot in the fire. And may I say that when we hear this, let's not be universalists and say, oh well, you know, God is just going to make peace everywhere. That's not what's being said. What's being said is every bow devised against the people of God, every chariot that's risen up, every horse that's directed against the people of God, the Lord is going to make those to cease. That's the context of the psalm, and that's the spirit in which these words are given. So finally then, here's the great big application. Be still and know that I am God. And the word be still there, that's a fine translation. But it may also be understood, and I think perhaps a little bit more directedly, stop striving, stop fretting, stop worrying, that kind of be still. And know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. And the Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. And then once again, stop to reflect. Selah. So we come to the end of Psalm 46. We move on to Psalm 47. What would be the response of the people of God that the Lord is indeed with them? Clap your hands and shout unto God with the voice of triumph. Now, I want to make sure that we understand what the clapping of the hands means. Okay? There are several times in your reading through the Old Testament, you'll hear that somebody or somebody else clapped. Okay? We take this, in the 20th and 21st century, clap your hands, all you people, shout unto God with the voice of triumph. We think, it's not like that at all. It's not even close to that. Okay? What it means is the clapping is what someone would do over another or in the presence of others to tell them to stop what you're doing and do this instead. Like that. So you remember the interplay between Balak and Balaam. So there's a point at which Balaam, where, he's being... He has the promise of a great big payday. If the only thing he'll do is curse the children of God, right? Curse the people of God. And finally, he utters this blessing instead. And Balak goes, what are you doing? I told you I'd pay you to curse them. And now you bless them three times altogether. Right? And he claps his hands to get him to stop doing that. Okay, so that's what's being said here. Clap your hands, all you people. Shout unto God with a voice of triumph. Not rhythmic clapping, but a clapping to stop what we're doing and whatever it is we're doing, to stop doing that. And instead, raise your voices to God with the voice of triumph. Don't think, and if we put these in context with one another, from 46 to 47, don't think that because things are going ill, that you have no reason to call upon the Lord. No reason to celebrate. No, I will be exalted in the earth, God says. So, clap your hands. Stop your mourning and instead lift your voice on high. Shout unto God with a voice of triumph. And so the clapping in the Old Testament doesn't necessarily mean, hey, celebration, let's clap. It's not like that. It's the stopping of one thing, the leaving off of one thing, and doing something that is indeed proper instead. All right, so the other thing that is really important that I want you to see here, remember how some psalm titles have the word maskil in them? And we've said that those are wisdom psalms, psalms of understanding, right? Okay, look at this with me in verse 7. For God is King of all the earth, sing ye praises with understanding. Literally in the Hebrew it reads, sing ye praises, maskil. That is, that this phrase that is translated here, with understanding, is that Hebrew word maskil, which is what we use to identify psalms that are replete with that greater understanding. There's a command here. The command is to sing with understanding, with wisdom. The Apostle Paul will also make that known, won't he, in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, when he says, now, if I sing in a tongue, right? Well, I'm singing along okay and just fine, but nobody understands me. And so, if someone else is singing along with me, and say we're using liturgical Hebrew, remember that the Psalms were originally written in Hebrew, and many of the Jews in the first century would have wanted to continue singing Psalms in Hebrew. And the Greek speakers of the congregation sang those Psalms in Hebrew, but didn't understand what they were singing. The apostle will say, well, I'm singing along just fine, but the one who doesn't understand me, he's not singing along at all. We're supposed to sing, brothers and sisters, with understanding, with wisdom, with insight into what it is that we sing. This is part of the reason we do scripture expositions, We work our way through the Psalter once every 7 years or so as we try to make our, or sorry, once every three and a half years as we try to work our way through the New Testament. We include the Psalms with that because we sing them and we want to sing with understanding. This is part of what we're doing here. So, as I've told you before, I tell you again here that it's nice to have well-ordered voices. It's nice to hear good harmonies. But for my part, and I think for the Bible's part, I would much rather jettison all of the harmonies and jettison all of the well-ordered voices if we could rise up in understanding. If we spend so much time on ordering ourselves to sound like a professional choir, such that we must sacrifice in understanding, I would much rather sacrifice in our sounding like a choir and increase in understanding as we sing. It's very important stuff. Okay, so this speaks of the triumph of God over all the earth. That's what Psalm 47 is about overall. And so the Lord Most High is terrible. He's a king over all the earth. He shall subdue the people under us, the nations under our feet. He shall choose our inheritance for us, the excellency of Jacob, whom we loved. He's gone up with a shout, with the voice of trumpet. And when it says God has gone up with a shout, I think that's right to think of that as the time when David brought the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem and drove the Jebusites out. That's that formal time in history when God went up into his inheritance and the Ark of the Covenant was settled in Jerusalem. I think that's what is being referred to here in Psalm 47. All right, so it is from there then that God reigns over the heathen and God sits upon the throne of his holiness and the princes of the people are gathered together, even the people of the God of Abraham, for the shields, not of Jerusalem, not of Judah, not of Israel, not of the ancient Near East, but the shields of the earth belong to God. He is greatly exalted. And so we have then that wonderful promise that God made to Abraham played out here in 47, that God indeed will rule and that redemptively over the nations. All right, so now we move on to 48. And we find with regard to Psalm 48, in the beginning of the psalm, we have God's base of operations in the earth. If God's going to rule over the nations, well then, where's he going to do that from? From Zion. Make no mistake. Great is the Lord and greatly to be praised in the city of our God, in the mountain of his holiness, beautiful for situation, the joy of the whole earth is Mount Zion on the sides of the north, the city of the great king. God is known in her palaces for a refuge. Verses 1 through 3 speak of the greatness of Zion, not because it's so great in its geography, so great in its elevation, so great in its opulence, so great in anything except that that's where God dwells. That's where God dwells. And so there are earthly descriptions given. I think these are supposed to be word pictures to teach us of the blessedness of Zion or the church. Zion, remember, was the headquarters of the church in the Old Testament. The church today has no particular headquarters like that. It's wherever it meets where God's name is rightly placed. And so it is in Zion then that we have these wonderful statements made. Let's see what it says here. First of all, it is a holy mountain. Well, it must be holy. God is there. If God touches his foot on that mountain, it is indeed by that holy. Remember what the Lord said to Moses. Take off your shoes. The place whereon thou standest is holy. Why? Because Abraham, Isaac, or Jacob walked there once? No, because God is there. It makes it holy. It's beautiful for situation. Can I say it this way? Let's go ahead and bring that up. It's beautifully situated. I remember when Joanna and I first drove back to visit my parents after they had settled in Chattanooga area, Appison, Tennessee. They were attending this little Baptist church that was in the hills, in the countryside there. And it was, you know, it was really interesting. You'd drive around this corner on this nice, you know, foresty road, and you come around this corner and you see this green glen, beautiful, just beautiful scenery. And right in the middle of this glen, up the hill a little bit, was this little white Baptist church, this little, you know, where my parents went. And it was picturesque. It was beautifully situated. beautiful for situation is Mount Zion. She is, of all places of the earth, beautifully situated. Again, not from her geography, not from anything physical, but because God is there. She is the joy of the whole earth. Why? Again, because that is the place from which this river of life and grace flows. Mount Zion on the sides of the north. What is the sides of the north? Well, for us who have been born and raised in the northern hemisphere, the sides of the north is that shady, cool, and breezy side. The refreshing side. The sides of the north. You know, one of the things that they teach you if you're struggling, if you're caught out in the woods and you don't know where you are, one of the things that they teach you is to look for the moss that's growing on one particular side of the trees. Why? Because it doesn't get direct sunlight. It's not heat. It's not hot. That'll be the north side of the tree. That'll tell you where north is, which way north is. And if you know which way north is, you might be able to move to where a place you can be found instead of lost. Right? North. On the sides of the north, then, whenever you hear that in Scripture, recognize that is the cool, the refreshing, the shady side, not the place that causes heat and sweat and discomfort. So Zion is beautifully situated. She is in the cool, in the refreshing place, and it's the city of the great King. God is known for her in her palaces for a refuge. All right, so then verses 4, 5, 6, and 7. Speak of the enemies of Zion and how they rise up against Zion and how the Lord conquers them. They end up, fear took hold upon them there and pain as of a woman in travail. Thou breakest the ships of Tarshish with an east wind. Okay, so where's Tarshish? Anybody remember? Western Mediterranean. If there's an east wind blowing, what's going to happen to the ships of Tarshish that are coming eastward toward the eastern end of the Mediterranean to unload their silver and their gold and their goods? They're going to meet with those waves that will break them into pieces. The wind will be contrary to them. It will drive them, and eventually it will best them. Thou breakest the ships of Tarshish with an east wind. All right, so then verse 8 through 14 is the wonders of the grace and mercy of God in Zion toward his people. Listen to what it says. As we have heard, so we have seen in the city of the Lord of hosts and the city of our God. God will establish it forever. We have thought of thy loving kindness. That's the Hebrew word chesed. So that's that covenant fidelity of God in the midst of thy temple. According to thy name, so is thy praise. Thy right hand is full of righteousness. It goes to the ends of the earth out of Zion. Let Mount Zion rejoice. Let the daughters of Judah be glad because of thy, the Lord's, judgments. Then we have a command in verse 12. Walk about Zion. Go round about her. Tell the towers of her. Mark well her bulwarks. Consider her palaces that you may tell it to the generation following. Notice, for this God is our God forever and ever. He will be our guide even unto the death. And so let me say it this way, and this may be a little bit of an over-the-top statement to get us all into thinking this way, but notice what he says there in verses 12 and 13 and then in verse 14. Knowing Zion is knowing God. If you will give this knowledge to the generation following, you will not find it out here somewhere else. You will not find it at the ends of the earth. You will find it here in Zion and knowing Zion, knowing her bulwarks and her towers and all of those things, being able to know her ins and her outs, her strengths and so on, knowing all of that is the way by which you will pass this on to your children. For this God is our God forever, and he will be our guide even unto the death. So tell it to the generation following. Wow. Great stuff in those three psalms. Let's stand and call upon